All right, tonight, I think one of the situations in the Bible that we have a lot to glean from, and that is the walk to Emmaus. And so, Leroy, you're our reader. Let's go to Luke 24 and find verse 13 and hold it for a second. It's kind of interesting, of the four gospel writers, Luke's the only one that has this one in it, this particular story. And he does go into quite detail. First of all, Luke was a physician. He's the only writer of the Bible that wasn't a Jew. And he also wrote this book strictly for the latecomers that come in late. And he also wrote it for the Gentiles. And how are you doing, Charles?
Good
to see you.
Sorry, everybody.
We know you got caught in traffic. Yeah, traffic's horrendous. So he wrote this especially for the Gentiles. And one of the lessons at the end of it, I think, can apply why he includes this story where the other three authors of the Gospels did not. So, Leroy, let's start Luke 24. Let's start with verse 13.
Okay. I've always considered, when I read this thing years back, that these two disciples, as the King James says, but I couldn't find whether two disciples. Well, there's more than disciples than just the 12.
So yeah.
They're not the apostles. These are just two followers.
Two followers, yeah.
Now, that same day, two of them were going to the village called Emmaus.
All right, let's stop there. What day? This is the resurrection day. So this is Sunday afternoon. It's late in the evening. And something that's going to play a little part in this in the next verse, as we'll see. Emmaus is west of Jerusalem. So if you're walking west, and it's about 7 to 8 miles, if you're walking west in the afternoon, what are you facing?
The sun.
The sun, okay? So here they're all, they've just left Jerusalem, and they got about a 7 mile walk to their home city, Emmaus, going west.
And you say this is on the first day of the week?
Yeah.
No, Sunday afternoon.
Is it the same day?
Well, it says on the same day, and it's talking about the resurrection morning before
this
that.
This is the third day.
Oh, yeah.
I was absolutely unaware of that.
Yeah, they're telling in a minute.
I need to reread that.
Yeah, they were talking with each other about everything that had happened.
Okay, now you can imagine what was going through their mind just coming from Jerusalem. The only thing was the death, the resurrection. Was there a resurrection? So they had lots to talk about. Okay?
Well, as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him.
Okay. One of the reasons, walking west... Well, you tell me the reasons they didn't recognize him.
They didn't have their sunglasses on.
That's certainly a factor. Walking west, what else?
They weren't expecting him. They thought he was...
Absolutely. You know, when you're in different circumstances, and you even when you see somebody, it just doesn't click. You know, if you see them in a familiar circumstance... You know who they are, but a lot of times, so here they were, so they were not expecting him. What other reasons?
I think the King James alludes to the fact that they had their heads down and they were sullen and just not even paying the attention to anything except just their miserable thoughts
Yeah, absolutely. They were focused on what they were talking about, and they certainly had sorrow, they had non-understanding, so they had a lot on their mind. And all of a sudden, here comes a stranger. And, you know, when you're preoccupied, you're not feeling good, you have things on your mind, and here comes a stranger, sometimes just a natural reaction is kind of tune him out. So Jesus joins them, and they do not recognize him at all.
And he asks them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?"
Now, why this question? Did he know?
Of course he knew.
course he knew.
Well, certainly. Why would he begin the conversation with this question?
Well, it's a statement that he gets the conversation he wants.
Okay.
They can't just answer that with a yes or a no. They've got to talk.
Absolutely. It's what we call in selling an open-end question. So you like to ask open-end questions because a person has to divulge something of themselves. So here he asks them open-end question. What in the world are y'all talking about? What's their reaction?
Well, they stood still, their faces downcast. And one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only visitor in Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened here these last days?"
You think this was a very friendly tone? See, yeah. See, I think there's lots of things. Number one, most likely, why are you bothering us? Secondly, is what in the world? Now, the Desire of Ages tells us they're just right outside Jerusalem. So this is early in the walk. So they haven't gone very far. And here's this guy comes up from Jerusalem, so he must have been there, and they're saying, "What in the world is wrong with you? What have you been listening to or hearing?" Okay?
Well, then Jesus asked him, "What things?"
About
Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. He was a prophet.
Now, what does that word imply, if anything, to you?
Well, he wasn't the Messiah then.
They still don't have it.
Still don't have any clue. See, he's a prophet. Well, when Jesus was saying that, "I am the bread of life, I am the light of the world, I am that I am," this is certainly much more than a mere prophet. John the Baptist was a prophet. So, as Carol says, still had no concept. So he's a prophet. Okay?
He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. And the chief priest and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death. And they crucified him.
Okay? Kind of a condemnation. There's a more comfortable chair over there, Sandy, if you'd like to take it. Or you can take Charles's. Certainly taking the blame where it was, didn't they? You know, chief priest and our rulers are the one that crucified him. So they're laying the blame on the right people.
Well, we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel.
Now, what did they mean by this?
Chase
the
Roman rule.
Yeah, overthrow the Romans. So here we have a prophet, and if he was the Messiah, we had hopes that he would overthrow the Romans. So they certainly had no clue whatsoever.
And what is more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body.
Okay, let's stop there. And this is the third day. What should that sentence have set off in their minds?
What he told them about happened on the third day.
Well, he said it was the temple. He agreed the temple would be destroyed, yeah, and built up on the third day. Yeah.
He told them quite several times. I'll lay my body down, and on the third day I'll raise it. Temple will go down, third day. This should have rang some bells because he told them over and over on the third day. They're saying, "Man, this has been the third day since this has all happened. We feel sorry for ourselves. We're lost. We're sad." Now some women say that his body's gone. They still had not put anything together. Very, very amazing. And yet these are some of the disciples that were very close and obviously very concerned, okay?
Well, the women came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who'd said that he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. But him they did not see.
Okay.
Well, he said...
Now, let's stop there for a second. Do you think they believed... What do you think they believed? Absolutely.
Wasn't Mary given a commission to go tell Peter and the others? So they didn't believe her?
They probably wasn't among that group. So you remember they were all scattered.
But it said they came and reported that they had seen a vision.
Yeah, somebody had said. See, I don't think it was Mary. I think they had heard. Remember, there's rumors all going around the city. So they could have picked this up at any time. But do you think they believe that Christ was resurrected from the way they're making their statements?
No, I don't think they believe that.
No.
They probably believe what was some theory of that would be most likely to have happened.
Yeah.
You know, something that would have, you know, they were stolen or something, you know, like that. Not unlikely.
Yeah, I don't think they, at this point, they had no concept that he was was resurrected. If they had, where would they be?
Looking for it.
That'd still be in Jerusalem. So by the very fact that they're going home, and they're sad, and they're contemplating, and they're discussing, means they had no concept that he had was risen, or else they wouldn't be going back to Emmaus. So... as always, in any story in the Bible, it's always God who looks good. Because these are two nice guys. What, by the way, we think
Cleophas.
Yeah, close enough. John, was calling him John. We think that he was a relative of Christ. So this is one of his relatives. But I had not put anything together. So they're home, full of sorrow, given up. Rumors.
In a state of confusion, it's interesting how, when we're in it, how everything, we don't put two and two together.
No.
I mean, and it just kind of shuts down our smart brain. Just kind of go on that autonomic kind of response to, oh, this is awful, this is terrible, what's going to happen?
That's right. You know? Yeah.
Well, just grief is disorienting.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I mean, their concept of freedom from the Romans, the nation set up, a conqueror, how they would all fit in, all shattered. And plus, I'm sure there was some emotional feelings that they had for Christ also.
There had to be a personal appeal that Christ had with them.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. So... but most of them, especially we know the 11, 12 disciples, they were kind of more, they had an attachment to Christ, absolutely, but they were still in that what's in it for me mode. And where am I going to rank? I mean, remember Thursday night, they're sitting there at the Lord's Supper still concerned about their rankings. So here they're leaving and very confused. Now, one of the great lessons is how Jesus handles this. Okay, Leroy.
Well, Jesus said to them, "How foolish you are and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken."
Well, let's stop there. Does anybody have different translations of foolish?
Unwise.
Because does anybody like to be called foolish?
Unwise.
No. Unwise, anybody else? Everybody else foolish or unwise?
Foolish, yeah.
Okay. Well, the Greek softens that word quite a lot. It's kind of slow to comprehend, slow to understand. It's not quite as strong as you ignorant.
And slow you are to believe.
Yeah. You know, it's not quite, you foolish idiot. So it's softened a little bit. But... listen to the prophets. Okay, read that again. Start over.
He could have said how ignorant you are.
Well,
with ignorance is one who did not understand. Okay, did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself.
Okay. Why this technique?
He wanted them to draw conclusions. He wanted them to come to awareness, not... I mean, any time we come to our own conclusions, it's more powerful than what somebody tells us.
Okay. Why didn't he just say,
"Here I am"?
"Here I am"?
Now, these people have know the scriptures. They've been looking for the Messiah all their life. They know all these scriptures. But they never put it together properly. So he takes them back and gives them the scriptures again so that they can put it together. Because Christ never, or the best way to ever teach anybody is never tell them anything. Let them discover it for themselves.
Okay.
And they'll never forget it.
Yeah, let's hold that thought because we're going to come right back to it in a second. What would have happened if he'd have said, "Hello, I'm the Christ"?
They would still thought he was a prophet.
Okay, number one, certainly. What else?
They wouldn't have learned anything.
Absolutely. Number two, big time. What else?
And without learning, there wouldn't have been understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. There would have, he could have brought them instant happiness, but rob them of the understanding of who he was and everything that was going on. He would have robbed them of that understanding.
He wanted them to be so convicted that they would not lose that conviction with what was coming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He would have robbed them of that. They would have been happy, but not learned anything. Absolutely. He would have done them an injustice by just simply revealing himself.
They still would never have understood his mission.
Absolutely. Not sure we, when he got through, they understood it, but it certainly laid the foundation. Now, where did he go back to prove who he was and what God was like?
The Old Testament,
the beginning. There's a great lesson in that. First of all, for some of our good Christian churches that say the Old Testament has nothing to offer per se, that's not correct. Because this was exactly where he preached from, where he revealed from. John the Baptist was taken back. Remember when he said, "Go see if this is really the Messiah," in prison? He was taken back to the Old Testament and went through all the prophecies and all the lessons. And so we can never undo the Old Testament, no matter how hard we try, because this is what revealed Christ to the people and this is what he used. So he went back at the very beginning with Moses and he gave these guys 7 miles worth of Bible studies and they began to understand what his mission is. What should we today learn from that?
Well, I wondered what scriptures he used. So one day I decided I was going to try to find out. And went back and started. And it is mind-boggling, the amount of scripture that he could use to point to himself. I wrote it down somewhere and I couldn't find it, but I was just concerned, were I alive in that day, I don't think I would have even understood. Of course, I didn't understand, I don't understand the Hebrew writings and all, but anyhow. But it is mind-boggling to be able to take those scriptures and present who Jesus was.
Mm-hmm.
In my Bible, there's at least 10 verses, or maybe I'm not counting them, but there's several listed right after that verse,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously are pointed back to the things that he was telling them.
See, he went back and gave them the same verses that they knew. But it's as... Pardon me?
That's all they had.
That's exactly right. And he, so he gave them what they had. It's whatever perspective you're looking at it. So if you're looking at all the texts in the Old Testament about a conqueror who was going to come and deliver you from the Romans... then all those texts have a different meaning. And that's what he's saying. Don't you understand that all of this pointed forward to the time of Christ who would die and then go to his glory? Well, they didn't want to ever hear that. And so then when he went back, and I'm sure he went through the stories of Moses, he went through the story of the serpent in the wilderness, he certainly took them through Isaiah, and Jeremiah, and all of these, they began to hear these texts in a much different way. A perfect example of this is John 5:39. For years, I used this when I used to give Bible studies and everything, and we used to have the old 20th century film strips. Anybody remember those things? Yeah, absolutely. See, John 5:39. Ye search the scriptures. Well, we use that as a proof text that search the scriptures, for in them they testify of me. Well, that's not what the text says.
But it's
he says, ye search the scriptures because you think that brings you salvation. See? So it's whatever perspective you look at. If you want to use a proof text that the Bible's the way, then you use John 5:39. That's not what the text says. So he went back through the Old Testament, same story, same verses, same thing they've heard all their life, and gave it the right perspective. And then that picture began to unravel. Had he just said, I am the Christ, look at what he would have robbed them of. Now, what does this tell us about our modern day witnessing?
Not much.
It doesn't tell us much, or our witnessing is not much?
Witnessing is not much in line with what we see here.
Jesus was never an answer man. Our witnessing, lots and lots of times, is we're the answer man.
I had teachers like Christ.
Pardon?
I had teachers like Christ that didn't give you answers.
Yeah.
They said, yeah, religion were answers that couldn't be questioned.
Well, you know, as all of us who have taught, you know, understand when the student is ready, the teacher can teach. I mean, there's never been a truer statement than that. See, but to be an answer man does nothing. You can memorize facts, but that doesn't do a thing for you. And so when we're asked what do Seventh-day Adventists believe, and we give 1, 2, 3, 4, or when we, you know, why do you do this? Well, this is the reason why. That's being an answer man.
What should we say?
Pardon me?
What should we say when someone asks that question?
Well, what would you think would be a good answer? You're gonna have to learn a principle here. I just simply ask questions. I don't answer them.
Well, wouldn't it be the right thing to do? Would be to have your get your Bible and say, well, let's look it up and see what it says about that.
Depends on the situation.
It does.
The Bible didn't answer the question of what Seventh-day Adventists believe.
Yeah. So,
yeah, no,
well, to give you an answer, I will give you an answer. I think there's two things that become very important as I go, get older and older. Number one is, if somebody asks me that, I do come back and say, what do you think Seventh-day Adventists believe? Because, see, I'm very interested in where they're coming from. And then number two is, I answer it personally by the only thing that matters is we believe in a God who loves us so much that He will do all He can to have us spend eternity with Him.
But we as a church have always expounded on two books of the Bible, Daniel and Revelation. Mm-hmm. And yet Luke tells us that it's our relationship with Christ that's important.
Certainly. You know, we do an excellent job of pointing out the differences. Well, I mean, that's asinine.
But it's unfortunate, but going back to the history of our denomination from the very beginning, it was the thing then with Jesus was going to return soon. That was the big thrust, even when I was young in 1931-32. Jesus is coming soon. But over the period of years, we have kind of forgotten that, and we started presenting messages to build an organization as though we had to have this big organization before Jesus could come again. And I think that's where our problem lies today.
Mm-hmm. But Him coming again can be a threat.
Right?
Preaching He's coming again can be a threat.
Yeah. Well,
see? I mean, it all goes back to...
We never got past that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just you. Our job is to reveal Jesus Christ. And then let the Holy Spirit work. And so, I mean, here's a perfect... I mean, this is, to me, an important lesson on out of this whole thing. Was that Jesus met them where they were, engaged them in conversations where they were, and met them on their own ground. And then He went back, and I can imagine He just asked question, well, what did you think this text meant? And they would say, and then He'd say, perhaps another way of looking at it is this, this, and this. But it's a teaching technique that we need to understand. We're not answer people. And sometimes we feel as it's a church, a domination, and we have all the right answers. Well, I think we have lots of right answers. But that's not the way to tell people.
What the challenge is we're a culture that's becoming more and more about having the answers.
Yes.
And so being someone who has the answers, in a sense, when someone comes to you looking for the answers... You know, when I was a teacher, most of my students didn't care about knowing how to do it. They wanted the answer.
That's right.
And we're training, you know, people to... It's not about knowing the concept of knowing the answer. If I can get the answer, that's mm-hmm. all that's matter. That's all that's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in sales training... And, you know, what I teach, if I state it, it could be or it couldn't be. If the customer states it, then it's a fact. And boy, that's absolutely important. You know, I can say, I think Hawk is a company that you would like to do business with. Could be or couldn't be. But if I go through Hawk and then I say, Nathan, let me ask you what I think is a very fair question. Does Hawk seem like a company that you would feel comfortable doing business with? If he says yes...
You have to quit there, and the next guy that answers loses money.
Yeah, that's right. See, if he says yes, then he said it, not me. And so that's why Jesus in teaching, He could have just given them the answers, wouldn't have done anything. He would have robbed them of the biggest blessing they had in their life. Was to go through this. Okay, Leroy. Any comments before we move on?
It must have gotten there.
Oh, hold on just a second. Any comments? Anything? Yes.
You're saying what our job is as witnesses? It sounds to me like our job is to present Jesus in such a way that Jesus is coming soon is not a threat.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's what our whole evangelism system at one time was, you know, Jesus is coming. It could be today, tomorrow, or next day. I mean, get ready. Well, nothing wrong with that message, but certainly not the motivation.
But how do you get ready?
You make Jesus so lovely that it's a natural consequence to be part of that. And that's what we fail to do.
Yeah, I never heard that definition of how to get ready.
Yeah. So we fail to do that. Okay. All right.
Well, he must have gotten their attention.
Yes, he did.
As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further.
Now, why did he do that?
See if they had their attention.
Check out their hospitality.
Jesus never forces himself upon us. Never forces himself upon us. So he acts like it's late in the evening, they're tired, must have had a wonderful discussion, but can you imagine if they were, the wheels were turning when they left Jerusalem, what in the world are they doing now? And so they start to go into their home, and he just keeps going to keep on moving.
But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them.
Okay. Now I got a question to ask. How many times in our life has Jesus been walking along with us, and we get towards the end of the trail and we just leave him and go our own merry way?
Too often.
Exactly correct. Well, that's fascinating, God. Now I've got some other things I've got to do. Yeah. Jesus just stands there because he's too polite, too kind. We just leave him there. But these boys urged. So Jesus didn't, they said, "Come and eat." He must have not said, "Well, okay." Because it says they urged him. Okay? So he comes in, sits down. Go ahead.
Well, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were open and they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight.
Okay. What did they recognize?
It was Christ.
It was the breaking of the bread. It reminded them of who he was.
That's correct. Very good.
Because they had just done it, what, three nights before?
Well,
three nights
they had
before,
been.
Three or four nights?
What else did they see?
Nail prints, probably, when he broke the bread.
But they had seen, it reminded them, especially of the feeding of the 5,000 and others, how he had broke bread. They recognized, but then they saw the nail prints. Then they knew. Do you see how when we jump from A to Z very quickly on what do we believe or what do we have to offer, what goes on, how we rob people of a blessing? If he would have just simply said, "Well, don't be sad, I'm Christ," look what he would have robbed him. So he breaks the bread, they see the nail prints, then they know. And he disappears. Now, here comes lesson number two of this. Lesson number one is, don't be an answer man. Take people where they are and guide them along with the Bible truths. Here's lesson number two.
Well, they ask each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us when He talked with us on the road, and he opened scriptures to us. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem.
What time was this now?
Late in the evening, dark time.
Dark, late in the evening? How many streetlights were there on those 7 miles back to Jerusalem? How many thieves were there? How many rocks? But you see, when you meet Jesus Christ, you can't help yourself. You have to go tell somebody. They didn't care what the time was. They didn't care what the dangers was. They didn't care. Their hearts burned when they heard about Jesus Christ. Not about the Sabbath, not about the 2300 days, not about these things. When they heard about Jesus Christ and when they recognized who He was, they had to go tell somebody. So they get up, they take off, and in the nighttime, they're going back the 7-8 miles right back to Jerusalem.
Once in Jerusalem, they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and He has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus had recognized by them when He broke the bread.
Yeah. See, remember last week we talked about and Peter? Here's again where Jesus, sometime during that day, had appeared to Peter himself. They couldn't wait, these two disciples, to get back and share what they had seen in their life. So many times, if we haven't met Christ and we don't know Christ, we have no message. We have lots of facts. But as Sancho Panza said to Don Quixote, facts are the enemy of truth. The truth that matters is when we see Christ, when we see God, when we understand who He is and what He's done for us, we've got to go tell people.
And we really see Him by seeing Him in somebody else.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The whole experience, the comment here about our hearts, what had happened to us, is telling. In essence, He was breaking the bread of life on the whole trip.
Absolutely. See, truth that matters, which is about Christ, about God, will excite, will get attention, will do. The very things that they had studied all of their life never moved them. Until He explained, "Don't you see, this is all about Christ." And they said, as they walked along, their hearts burned. And then, man, when they saw Him, they had to go tell somebody. The greatest example of this, to me, is the story of the demoniacs. Jesus healed two of them. We tend to believe that they spent less than 30 minutes with Jesus. They wanted to follow Him, obviously. You just were a crazy person and He just got healed. Who else would you want to hang with? And Jesus told them to go back to their town, Decapolis, 10 little towns. Less than 30 minutes of conversation. Wouldn't you just love to have been and heard those 30 minutes, see? But they went back and they told the only story that we have to tell. This is what I was like. I met Jesus Christ, and this is now what I'm like. And that's the story they went back. A little over a year later, Jesus goes back to these 10 little towns, and there's literally thousands of people waiting for Him to come. Simply because the greatest message they had was, "We were nuts and crazy. We met Jesus Christ, and look what He's done in our life." That witness will make people's hearts burn to get to know Him. So the walk to Emmaus, very powerful story. Met these two men in their sorrow, questioned them, taught them, revealed Himself, and when they had that glimpse, they had to go tell somebody. Never changes. Father in heaven, you know, I think, Father, that each one of us have been on that road to Emmaus. I think that in our spiritual journey, that we've had questions, we felt sorrowful, we wondered why does this happen? You come along, and you probably use the same technique. What things are happening? And may we share them with you, because you will always reveal truth to us. And my Father, may we be like those two disciples. Once we get a glimpse of you, may we always, as they did, say, stay with me a little bit longer. Stay and sup with me. So thankful for what you've done in my life. I know that these folks here tonight are thankful for what you've done in theirs. Help us to share the true message that you are a God of love, that you do everything in your power to reveal that love, and your greatest wish is that we spend eternity together. How can we not love you? In Jesus' precious name, amen.